If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Extra time. Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, and this week I've got two very special guests for you. I'd say probably the two of the greatest pundits in the history of European football here. I've got Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie.
Hello.
And I've got Michael McCubbin. Hello, Michael.
How's it going?
How are you both?
Yeah, not too bad. I had my first haircut since lockdown on Saturday. So, feeling a few stone lighter as a result. It's nice. Although I won't be getting the Griezmann comments, which I was actually, you know, beginning to kind of make part of my personality. So those are going to stop. So I'm going to have to find something else to
I'm sure they'll
enrich
find
my life.
I'm sure they'll find a new name soon. Yeah, they endlessly calling you Griezmann. Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Pat. I did my marathon at the weekend, so I'm a little bit stiff.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, got it done, so I'm pleased that's all over. But, yeah, excited for this podcast today. So
you were absolutely motoring, just to say, Doogie. I caught, for everyone at home, I caught Doogie at the 9 mile point, I think.
Yeah.
And I got to the spot at 10 when Doogie said, to be fair, around that time he was going to be passing through. And within 30 seconds, he was just speeding past. I was very impressed.
How long did you take in the end to do your marathon, Dukes?
It took 3 hours 22.
Is that good? That sounds good.
I was aiming for under 3 hours 30, so I was pleased.
Damn. And this was because you were going to do, was it the Great North Run, but obviously got cancelled?
Yeah, not the Great North Run. I was supposed to go to Amsterdam this weekend. But that got postponed till next year. I'd done all this training, so I was like, sack that. I'm not going to wait a year. Just gonna go out and do one around London. But yeah, it was very kind of McCubs to pop into Richmond Park just before I nearly got hit by a stag. So yeah, it was very dramatic. But yeah, it was good to get it done. But yeah, I feel how I look today. I feel like an old man.
I love running around Richmond Park though, because it's right near my house. And also you get those kind of, sometimes you get a really dramatic like cloud of parakeets like fly up around you. You know, because like all the parakeets just living in Richmond Park. For people who don't live in London, there's this idea that essentially like people kind of would just free their pet birds when they couldn't be asked to look after them anymore. And now Richmond Park is full of like exotic birds, like brightly coloured green parakeets. Mm. And so often when you're running along, like you get just like clouds of them flying around you.
That's amazing. I didn't notice that, to be fair. I think I was so focused on trying to, you know, remain breathing. But yeah, no, it was good. And it was very kind of McCubbs to come and watch me for that little stint as well.
To go back to McCubbin's haircut, I've got to say, when I was watching Arsenal play the other day, I saw Mo Elneny go and close somebody down, win the ball, and then play just, you know, like a simple pass that set the team away on the counter. And I thought, this is big Michael McCubbin energy. Just like the absolutely relentless energy coupled with the hair, I thought had a real McCubbin quality.
Yeah,
and the simple yet effective
It's been so long since I even played five-a-side. I can't really remember how I used to play football, or if I'm even able to do it anymore. But yeah, that's a big compliment.
Yeah, well, shall we move on to this week's episode then? Because I could talk about your hair and Doogie's running all day, but we should probably cover some football. before we get any more hatred, given that last week I suggested Arsenal sell Aubameyang and it did not go down well. So a couple of weeks ago, we did a How Worried Are We episode, where we went through the Premier League's big sides, how they'd underperformed so far, and asked how worried we were about those bad starts to the season continuing. So this week, we're going to do that, but with European teams, because some of the big clubs around Europe have been underperforming to date. So what I'm going to do is give you a European super club, and then I'm going to ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried you are about them. 1 being not worried at all, 10 being extremely concerned, okay? So we're going to start off this week with Paris Saint-Germain, all right? So, McCubbin, scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about Paris Saint-Germain? And then I'll ask Doogie, and then we'll talk about it.
Oh, tough one. I think, I don't know, maybe like 7?
Whoa!
It's quite high. Yeah, just there's a few things that are quite concerning at the moment, I think, at PSG. Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, Doogie, do you have anything to offer against a 7? Can you raise a 7?
I wouldn't probably raise one. I'd probably go lower just because... I'd probably go like a 5, just because of the off-the-pitch is very concerning, I think. But actually on the pitch, they're still by far the best side in France. And yes, their summer wasn't probably ideal, but I still think they'll easily have enough to win Ligue 1. So on that scale, I'm only a 5.
Okay, well, I've got to start with Michael then, because because 7 is pretty high. So I'd like to see like what made you arrive at that.
Yeah, I mean, I might be over-egging it a little bit. You know, in a month's time, we might look back on this and be like, actually, there wasn't that much to worry about. I think Doogie kind of summarised it quite well, to be fair. I think to be honest, they probably will still comfortably win Ligue 1. But at PSG, that is very much a minimum requirement, perhaps even more so than at Juve and Bayern, who are going to get on to. Just because they you know, in terms of the resources they have and the players they have, they're just so far ahead of the rest of the league, aren't they? Especially since kind of 2017-18. And so far, actually, you know, the last 4 weeks, or the last kind of 2-3 weeks, have been okay. Like they won their last 4 games. Obviously, they had a terrible start to the season, and that was, kind of coronavirus had a lot to play in that, didn't they? They had a lot of players out, and then the ending of that Marseille game had a lot of, got a lot of players banned and so on and so forth. And I think Ligue 1 in general has been terrible for kind of discipline at the start of this season. I think there's been like 29 red cards in 6 game weeks, which is just ridiculous. I can't think of any other time. I mean, I know it's been a pretty crazy kind of start to the season in a lot of leagues, but that is particularly mad. That's not like a harsh handball rule or whatever. That is like players going at each other. And obviously that PSG Marseille game was, I think, probably the most bloodthirsty, at least at the end. And then Di Maria didn't even get sent off, but then he got a 4-game ban, didn't he? So yeah, they lost a lot of key players early doors. They've kind of made up that now. You know, they're fourth in the league now. They're only 2 points off top. They've got the best goal difference. Their rivals have had a head start in some ways, but they will probably bring it back. But I think the most concerning thing for me at this moment in time is probably the Tuchel-Leonardo situation.
Yes,
like that seems like, I don't know. I'm worried for Tuchel's job essentially, because I think if PSG do go on a bad run of form in the next 2 months, and let's remember they also have quite a tough Champions League group, one that I would still back them probably to win, but you know, there are some stumbling blocks there. You know, a United team who were able to undo them to an extent a couple of years ago, a Leipzig side that, you know, are always going to be able to do damage, especially to a defence which has, I think, looked a little bit weaker. I think it's lacked a little bit of leadership since Thiago Silva left. I know that's kind of an easy thing to say when a captain does leave, but you know, that is the case. And I'll get on to, you know, players they've let go as well. So yes, I'm a little bit worried for Tuchel. For anyone who isn't familiar with the situation, basically 2 weeks ago, kind of I think about 5 days before the window shut, Tuchel basically came out in the media and said that PSG expectations should essentially be lower this season because he basically, you know, he hasn't been backed in the market. He wasn't backed in the market over the summer, essentially saying that the squad looks weaker, that players have been let go for free. All, you know, all very justifiable concerns, I think. Leonardo, you know, didn't react very well to that. You know, said that we don't like these statements, the club don't like them, neither did I like them. And basically suggested that Tuchel could be punished internally, and that if he, you know, if he wants to stay at the club, that he needs to kind of respect his elders, essentially respect the hierarchy. So kind of fighting talk, and you know, I'm not an expert on PSG and the kind of internal workings, but from what I've read, I think him and Tuchel haven't enjoyed the best relationship since Leonardo came back to the club as sporting director last summer. So that does worry me a little bit. And I think the other thing that worries me kind of in the long term as well is are the concerns that Tuchel has. Like, they let go two of their best young players for free this summer, in Aouashish and Kouassi. You know, Kouassi was someone who looked pretty good when he played last term, you know, a centre back. They obviously, you know, lost Thiago Silva this summer. Like, I feel like that would have presented a player of Kouassi's quality more chances to get first team football, and yet PSG weren't able to persuade him to stay. He saw Bayern Munich, who are already stacked in that area, as a better option. Aouashish as well, obviously, you know, has had a really good start to life at Saint-Étienne. You just would have thought that there would have been some way at least to get a fee for him, because I think the main criticism is, yeah, they lost them for free, and they've lost a number of great, you know, great academy products over the last few years. But at least, like, last year, you know, I'm trying to Nkunku and Diaby, you know, at least they did get fees for them. And, you know, in the year since, it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, they look like bargains. But in terms of, like, their relative lack of first team football at the time, 10 to 20 million euros isn't the worst. At least they were able to get something out of them. I think that's a little bit of a concern. Obviously, like, this summer they brought in Rafinha on deadline day, I think it was. You know, and I mean, their deadline day activity in general seemed like a little bit of a scramble. But, like, that was an all right deal. But at the same time, is Rafinha going to bring to PSG anything that Aouashish couldn't, or anything that Sarabia wasn't bringing last season? I'm not so sure. Definitely isn't a first team regular. Definitely kind of more of a bench option, in my eyes. Obviously, Cavani went as well, and Thiago Silva himself said that the handling of the Cavani situation was a little bit of a muddle. So, yeah, it just seems like, considering that they got to the Champions League final in August, it just feels like this is a massive come down for PSG, you know, in a season when they should have been building on that. At the moment, I can't see them improving on what they did last season at all. And yeah, in the long term, I'm a bit concerned for Tuchel's future and just generally the makeup of that squad. Like, their defence definitely needs improvement. Like, they also haven't, you know, strengthened in the fullback areas, which is always a concern with PSG. So yeah, I think there's a number of things that I'd be concerned about in that sense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, there are players coming through there who you can see are solid. Like, I think Rafinha off the bench is probably a better midfield option off the bench than they've had in quite a long time. But Danilo Pereira in on loan seems like a weird one. Moise Kean seems like a weird one. I'm fine with Florenzi coming in on loan to replace Meunier, but, like, yeah, I agree. I still kind of look at that back line and I think, is this Champions League winning quality? The midfield, if Verratti were to get injured again, looks quite conservative. You know, like, Rafinha, I think, is a really good player, but Rafinha was primarily great in defence last season. Gay, primarily defensive. Herrera, I think, these days is primarily defensive. Like, you don't have a lot of kind of game-changing ball progression in that midfield, and Di Maria's a year older.
Contracts as well. I think Di Maria's contract is up next summer. And,
really?
And obviously Mbappe and Neymar are out of contract in 2022. So it's like, yeah, there's going to be some serious work to either kind of keep Di Maria on or locate a a replacement for him, and also, you know, keep, especially Mbappe, like trying to tie him down to a new deal, because yeah, that's where it could get really bad for PSG if suddenly they they're in real danger of losing like Neymar and Mbappe next summer. Then yeah, like I don't know, they could look back on this season as where it kind of really fell apart.
Plus there was like the kind of sense of what this summer could have been, right? Like because they were linked with that loan move for Dele Alli, you kind of think if Alli had come in, or maybe they could have secured, you know, an option to buy or something, then you would have your ready-made Di Maria replacement already in the ranks, and you'd sort of think, okay, well, maybe the future of this side is a little bit more solid. But yeah, that it does sort of feel like this might be the last year that you've got all those guys together. And if you were gonna do that, if you were gonna kind of run out this team again for another shot at the Champions League, you think some short-term investment would probably have been the wise thing to do? Because yeah, I think that this will probably be their best season for a while, unless they go and strengthen really heavily next summer. But I'm not even sure how they do that now. Dukes, what do you think? I mean, I agree with Michael that I think probably the league will be absolutely fine, but given that the success of a PSG season usually comes down to the Champions League, do you have much faith in their ability to get there, or do you think Tuchel will not see out the season?
I think Tuchel unfortunately might be gone. I mean, all this chat publicly is so damaging, and it just, you know, if you're saying that publicly, imagine what you're saying behind the scenes. I think Tuchel might only have sort of 5 to 6 months left, really. I can actually see him getting a Premier League job by the end of the year. I think
I actually think even if he survives the season, I think he'll be gone at the end of the season, to be fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be fantastic at United. I think, you know, depending on how this season goes at Chelsea, there might be a lot of pressure under Frank Lampard. I can see either Pochettino or Tuchel taking over one of those two jobs as well. I think, you know, Tuchel's standing has only been improved by this PSG situation. And over, you know, his tenure is what I mean. But this summer, I feel like they have missed a bit of an opportunity, as you say. I think they finally got past that stumbling block of a Champions League quarterfinal. And they actually played really well in the final against Bayern. They had their chances. Mbappe missed a number of opportunities. Choupo-Moting missed that opportunity at the end as well. And they just weren't quite good enough to be a very solid Bayern side. Yeah. But it's always really difficult to motivate yourself after you've come so close to it. Even though most onlookers were like, this is Bayern's to lose, you know, Bayern are heavy favourites here, you can bet in the PSG camp, in the PSG hierarchy, they were thinking this is a great opportunity to win this. And they got so close, and it just felt like it was a potential sort of tipping point on the project, and they need to continue their investment to continue their upward trajectory. And I think they've just taken quite a few backward steps that might sort of cost them any hope of winning the Champions League this year, considering that Liverpool look like they are stronger despite that weird result against Aston Villa. I still think they'll be much improved in the Champions League. Barcelona and Real Madrid won't stand for their last couple of seasons in the Champions League as well. So, and Juventus are finally going, you know, full hog for it as well. So we'll see. I think it's going to be really difficult for PSG to win the Champions League this year, to be totally honest.
Agreed.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Agreed. So I think we're probably like relatively middling there, depending what happens and depending if Tuchel goes on who they get in to replace him. But shall we move on to their opponents from the Champions League final, Bayern Munich?
Yeah.
So, Dukes, scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about Bayern Munich right now?
Probably like a 3 or a 4. Yeah, not particularly high, although, you know, we'll get into it in due course. But their performances have been a little bit troubling, I would say.
Mikey, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd probably say about the same. Like, yeah, probably a 3. Like, yeah, there's nothing that immediately makes me worried for them that much.
Although I do think
like they're probably less likely to win the Champions League this year. It's hard because they basically did everything that they could last season, isn't it? It's hard to, you know, it's obviously not going to be as good a season as last year, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, impossible standards. Dukes, Do you want to kind of set the scene with Bayern? Like, yeah. given that we're mostly around a kind of 3-4, why are they in this podcast as a big team from Europe who are potentially underperforming right now?
Well, I think people were slightly confused, A, by their summer business. I mean, they started the summer really well. They got in Kouassi, as we said. They got in Nubel. They got in Sané. But then they didn't sign Coutinho and Perisic for financial reasons, and probably quite sensible financial reasons, given that Coutinho, as well as he played last year, was going to cost over 100 million euros. I think Perisic, at his age, was a useful contributor, but they thought they could get someone in for younger and cheaper. And then they waited until the final few days of the window and then brought in Bouna Sarr from Marseille, the right back there, who I know very little about, to be honest. He's not someone that has seemed to be highly talked about over the last few years. I mean, he looks like a quite solid right back, 28 years old, quite good defensive numbers, etc. But nothing to write home about, at least. And then they got in Marc Roca from Espanyol, the defensive midfielder, who they'd wanted to sign the previous summer as well. Mm-hmm. And then Choupo-Moting on a free after he'd been released from PSG as backup to Lewandowski. Seems like a very weird move, to be honest. I don't really know how he's still doing it, getting these awesome sort of, you know, club roles. And it's not great news for Joshua Zirkzee, who played really well in the limited minutes he got last year. And then Douglas Costa was that winger that they got in to replace Perisic. And he had a fantastic spell at Bayern Munich, but his injuries have really taken his toll in the last few years. He's now 30, 31. It's not the most exciting signing. So it was a confusing summer. And obviously they lost Thiago as well. How did I nearly forget that? I mean, so crucial to them over the last few years. Even with his injuries, I think he's played over 40 games for something like 4 of the last 5 years. So he's played a lot of football. And then started the season exceptionally. They absolutely demolished Schalke in a great display of attacking football. Sané, Gnabry, Lewandowski already showing sort of all the hallmarks of a great attacking triumvirate, as it were. But then Schalke's subsequent results have sort of shown that maybe that wasn't as good as it suggested, because they are a complete mess at the start of this year. They've got injuries all over the park. David Wagner's now been sacked. They look like sort of one of the teams that could well go down. I'd actually be surprised if they don't go down at this moment, Schalke. And then they lost to Hoffenheim, first defeat in 32 games. So ended that big unbeaten run. Obviously a loss was coming, but it was the manner of that loss. They were absolutely torn apart on the counter-attack. Andrej Kramaric played exceptionally well, exploited all the space behind them. And then I was watching them against Hertha Berlin, and they won 4-3, and everything looks rosy. But they were pegged back twice in the final 10 minutes, and it was only a Lewandowski penalty in the last minute that saw them win that game. Mm. And there are issues defensively with Bayern. I know it's easy to say, because they play that high line, and everyone compliments that high line, and it's part of the reason they're so dominant, is because they can control the space and possession in the opposition half, just like Liverpool. But it does leave yourself open when you're playing Jerome Boateng at the back, who is still a fantastic long-range passer and does have a purpose. And fair play to him, because he's survived at Bayern Munich despite being, talked about being potentially being sold about 3 or 4 times. It seemed like his head was on the chopping block numerous times throughout his Bayern career. But he's too slow now, really, for this system. They need to play Nicolas Sula and David Alaba. And supposedly, from what we're hearing as well, their funds aren't fantastic, despite their success last year, which is why they can't give David Alaba the contract he wants either. So that could potentially become a sticking point in the next 12 months as well. And then the composition of their midfield, I think, is a bit of a problem as well. Goretzka continues his development into a sort of awesome all-round midfielder. I think he's fantastic. But Kimmich, really weirdly, for a sort of right-back playing in midfield, is actually quite attacking. And the game I saw him play against Hertha Berlin, he was really linking up almost in Thomas Müller's role as well, going up right and playing as a sort of 10 as well, which leaves you so open on the counter-attack. And they just looked really open. And whilst they continue to score goals in abundance, they are just really weak defensively on the basis of those 3 games so far. And they now find themselves fourth behind some teams that are playing pretty well. I mean, Leipzig in particular started the season exceptionally. So their last few performances have been troubling. But in terms of the overall picture, I just think people are slightly underwhelmed maybe with their summer and the fact it was all conducted so late. But that's probably a product of the season, you know, the 1920 season finishing so recently. So it's a bit of a mixed bag with Bayern. But again, similar to PSG, I think they've easily got the squad that's good enough. They just do look slightly weaker than last year.
Yeah, here's the thing about Bayern. Like, I mean, they were better than PSG last year. So that should overall make me less worried. But I also think the Bundesliga is stronger than Ligue 1. Mm. And so it's possible that a Leipzig or a Dortmund get super hot and do manage to contend with them for the league quite deep. I still think, you know, Bayern are going to win the league. But losing Thiago is a major issue. And they said in the summer, or at least it was generally known, that their plan was, well, Tolisso will come back in and Tolisso will be that kind of Thiago replacement. Tolisso played 600 minutes last year. I think he played 50 minutes the season before. That's really, really worrying. I mean, barely playing for the last two seasons. He hasn't played over 1,600 minutes in a season for them in the 3 years that he's been there. And Sané's amazing. Rocca, I think, is a great signing. Very cheap. They got him for about a third in the end of what was talked about the previous summer. But are those guys going to be better than Coutinho and Thiago were last year? I'm not really sure. And yeah, those defensive issues. It's almost like we did talk about these in the Champions League. We said this is a worrying situation, and then they got away with it against Lyon, and they got away with it in the final to some degree as well.
Yeah, because do you remember that first 20 minutes against Lyon? Lyon could have scored like three.
Yeah, and we just kept saying this is going to come back to bite them. And look, you know, they got through the Champions League. They won the Champions League. So they won't really mind getting these harsh breaks maybe early in the season in the Bundesliga. And they did start the league slowly last season as well.
Yeah.
But you do look at this and you think that they've got the best XG for, and they've scored more goals than anybody else in the league. They've scored 13 goals in three games, obviously helped by that 8-0 win over Schalke. But only three teams have conceded more than them. They're ninth for expected goals against. So they are giving up chances. Mm. And that loss, you know, away at Hoffenheim. Yes, Hoffenheim are a decent side, but to lose 4-1 away at Hoffenheim, it's not like losing, you know, 2-1 away at Leipzig. So I do have some slight concerns there. I think that there probably will be a little bit of a step down, whereas I think some other teams maybe are making a step forward, like Dortmund have lost Hakimi, but I think have generally strengthened as a side. Leipzig have lost Werner, but they've brought in Sorloth and Hwang Hee-chan to kind of cover that gap. Plus, they'll get a full year of Dani Olmo. I don't know. I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed I think that I wouldn't bet on another team winning the Bundesliga, but I'm not as confident about Bayern winning the Champions League as I probably would have been towards the end of last season. I thought they'd probably go out and strengthen the defence and would potentially be favourites to take the Champions League again. And now, I don't know, I think I'd put Liverpool above them for certain.
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree. I think with the Bundesliga as well, it's especially with Dortmund, I think there's you know, there's a few players in there where, you know, we haven't seen like Haaland play a whole season for Dortmund yet.
Yes.
Like Reina's already got three assists and Bellingham's already like playing really well. Like they've got two 17-year-olds like playing really, really well in the midfield. It's just pretty mad. Like, I don't know, there's a little bit of the unknown about Dortmund, which I think if I was a Bayern fan, I'd be a little bit worried about in terms of like the potential for them to put together like a really exciting title challenge. But I think, I don't know, I feel like my faith in Bayern is, yeah, I'm sure it's probably similar with you guys. It's just kind of based on this kind of season after season of them being able to hit that, you know, fifth gear. Like kind of around January, February.
Yeah.
Obviously, especially under Flick as well. But I think it's, I don't know, it's always going to be tough. I think like, I remember reading about like Guardiola said that like in his first season at Barcelona or his first couple of seasons, his kind of lowest moment in some ways was, I think his lowest kind of mood was like after beating Man United in the Champions League final, because he realised that he had no idea where he could go after like, you know, after doing everything there was to do in his first season managing the team. And it's, I guess it's kind of similar with Flick in some ways. Like, he did everything in like 8 months. Like what else can he do, really? And I guess, yeah, I guess in the long term, it's just about finding those replacements. But I think, like, you know, getting Kouassi, I think he'll be hopefully able to kind of sort out that kind of lack of speed and dynamism in the defence, hopefully. But I think, yeah, like getting a Müller replacement will be tough, because I think like he was almost kind of the defining player of that team, wasn't he, last year when they really kind of hit supernova. Obviously, like Lewandowski's always going to be impossible to replace, but I guess and also with Thiago, I think I don't know. I'm maybe not so worried about Thiago, because I think you're never going to replace him. I think there's enough quality in that central midfield to be able to make it work. Mm-hmm. And maybe at the moment there's a few kind of teething problems and whatnot, but yeah, I definitely expect to see Mark Rocker playing more of a role in that midfield in say 2-3 months time, hopefully.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. So, I mean, we're tentatively worried about PSG, very, very slightly worried about Bayern. Should we move on to our third team, which is Juventus? I don't know, I'm intrigued about this one. Okay, you guys, what have you got? Rating 1 to 10. Michael, how do you feel about Juve?
God, I don't know whether to rate them as high as PSG. I'll say 6. I'll say 6 for Juve.
Mm-hmm. Doogie?
I'll go a bit higher. I'll go 7. I think I'm the most worried about them of all the teams, just because of the strength of competition, really.
I agree. So shall I just have a little run through like their opening kind of couple of games? Because they have only played 2 games, so we do know kind of the least about them that we know about all these big sides. They're currently in 8th. They've got 4 points after 2 games. They do have a game in hand on most of the teams above, and if they win that, they could go as high as 3rd. Beat Sampdoria 3-0 in the opening match, looked pretty easy, but then drew 2-2 with Roma away, and were probably lucky to get away with a point there. I think XG had it at 2.8 for Roma, 1.9 for Juve. So, in a sense, the attack looks pretty good. Like, both games so far, they've put up about 2 XG, but 8 teams have still produced more than their 14 shots a game, and 11 teams are allowing fewer shots a game to date. Dougs, I think you're right about the strength of the league. Can you just give us kind of the lie of the land in the Italian division? Because right now the competition looks extremely tough for Juve this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Atalanta and Milan both have perfect records. Atalanta have just sort of picked up from where they finished last season. I think they were the first team at least in a while to score 100 league goals. They've now got 13 in 3. Milan yet to concede a goal, as are Napoli, although they've only played 2 games. Of course, Napoli were supposed to play Juventus the weekend before last, but that was cancelled because a few Napoli players had contracted coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a really good sort of test to see where Juventus were at, particularly defensively, because Napoli have started really well. Irving Lozano's been much more involved. Victor Osimhen's looked useful. He hasn't got a goal yet, but he got a really good assist when they absolutely thrashed, I think it was Genoa. Inter have also looked pretty good. Roma look like they've slightly improved, although Dzeko still sort of misplaced his shooting boots. But Inter Milan, I saw their game against Fiorentina when they came back at the death to win 4-3. I think lots of their new signings have started very well, and they've now got a real depth of competition in midfield that's pretty unrivaled, really, in Italy, with the likes of Sensi, Barella, Gagliardini, Eriksen, of course, they can use as well. Alexis Sanchez continues to play well. Your only issue with Inter Milan is probably the composition of their back three. But then they managed to keep hold of Skriniar in the end as well. So Inter Milan look really good. Napoli have started surprisingly well. And Milan and Atalanta have continued their exceptional form from the back end of last year, which saw them, I think, top the table in 2020. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be difficult for Juventus. I don't think anyone can take too much from their opening 2 games, in that they played the second game against Roma with 10 men for a large part of it after Rabiot got sent off. And against Sampdoria, they looked pretty good, although Sampdoria aren't the toughest of oppositions these days. So it's really early days to judge Juve, but the strength of the competition has definitely got better. I think year on year, Serie A is just getting more and more competitive, really.
Yeah, and I just think that there are so many things that could go wrong for this Juve side. Like, that's really the thing. Like, last year, they had 13 penalties in the league.
Wow.
Lazio were the only team who got more. They got 15. And so Ronaldo got, you know, what was it, 31 goals or whatever, but only 19 of those were from open play. So he actually scored fewer goals from open play in the league than Danny Ings did or Raheem Sterling. So if they start getting fewer penalties, that could be an issue, though generally there are a lot of penalties in Serie A. I don't quite understand their squad building either. I mean, through the first couple of games, it seems like they're going to be a possession team. I think they've had 61% possession so far, which is top of the league. But they played 3-4-1-2 against Samp, with Ramsey in the hole behind Kulusevski and Ronaldo. Cuadrado was right wing back, and then Frabotta, who's like a young player, was at left wing back. Then against Roma, they went to 4-4-2, and it was almost exactly the same lineup, except Morata came in for Frabotta. But this time, Cuadrado went from right wing back to left back. Danilo went from right centre back to right back. Ramsey was playing off the left. Kulusevski was playing on the right wing. Like, it just felt like everyone was being shifted around so much. And I thought, if I were a new coach coming into a side that, despite winning the league last year, was a bit of a mess, I would probably try and have a clear idea of what my formation was going to be, what my lineup was going to be. And then they also went, like, okay, it seems like a weird thing to criticize them for going and getting Chiesa in, because Chiesa's obviously an excellent player. But I just don't really understand the squad building. Like, Dybala hasn't played so far. Arthur and Bentancur have been on the bench. McKenny came in, which I think is a weird signing too. I just don't really understand what Pirlo and the board think the issues in this side are, because I think the defence has been getting steadily worse. And yes, we expect De Ligt to get better. Yes, Chiellini's coming back, though I think if the hope for your defence getting better rests on a 35-year-old returning from a year out, that is a troubling situation. I don't know. I don't really know what Juve are going to be. And given the competition in the league, I just want somebody there who's reliable and a known quantity. Like, if Pirlo turns out to be, like, just a middling manager, I don't think they'll win the league.
It could be a real test. I think the one thing I'd say about their defence is they've got Demiral coming back as well, hopefully quite soon. And he actually looked really good before he got injured last year. And then they've loaned out Romero to Atalanta, so hopefully he gets some experience. So I think they're okay at sort of centre-back. I think it is their wing-backs that I think are more troubling. I don't know how Danilo is still playing for Juventus, to be honest. I think he's just such an average player, to be honest. And Cuadrado, as well as he played as a right wing-back last year, you know, it's not a long-term fix either. I wasn't too bad on their business, actually, just because they got rid of Higuain, got rid of Matuidi as well, massive wages, both over 30, thought that was quite sensible, bringing in Kulusevski, Morata, Chiesa. I mean, Morata was probably their fifth or sixth choice, but they got him in, and I think he's an improvement on Higuain. So I think their business isn't too bad, but yeah, as you say, a lot of pressure on Pirlo, because if he's the guy that is brought in and then they end their sort of monopoly over the league, it's sort of going to stick with him for quite a while and could be quite troubling to a fledgling managerial career.
It's not that I didn't like their business. It's more that I just didn't understand how it was meant to fit together. Like, I think, you know, getting in a young Arthur for an old Pjanic, I think, is good. But I also look at that team and I'm like, if Bentancur isn't playing, Rabiot can do lots of defensive stuff, but he's better when he has freedom to get forward. Ramsey doesn't really have the legs to do, you know, proper box-to-box football anymore. You kind of want him running into the final third. But Arthur does no defence, or at least he did last season. And I just kind of think, like, Bentancur and Rabiot are the two guys I would always start in this midfield and then figure out the rest.
I was kind of done.
It's just I don't understand. It's one of those things where, like, maybe these pieces all fit together, but maybe the only way it works is just to say to, like, two of these guys, you don't play for us, really.
I think that's the problem, because it's like, for me, like, looking at those signings and their kind of squad makeup, like, I don't know, like a 4-3-3 with Rabiot, Arthur and Bentancur, I think could work really well. And then I guess you'd have to and then have, say, like Kulusevski and Chiesa on either flank, or have Ronaldo on the left flank perhaps, and Dybala in the middle. But then again, then you're going to probably have to only play one of Dybala or Ronaldo. Yeah, it's a little bit of a headache. Not one that I necessarily think is a bad thing. Like, you know, Juve are, like, going, you know, ideally going for the Champions League, although I think that's a long shot this season. You know, you do have to have a deep squad. But I think it's, yeah, keeping those attacking players happy. Or I wouldn't actually be that worried in that sense. I think it is the defence that concerns me the most, just because they have been, like, over reliant on Chiellini before. I think him and Bonucci as a centre back pairing are just far too slow. Like we saw that against Roma. Like I know that they, you know, the midfield was easy to cut through because Rabiot wasn't there, but they could not deal with Roma on the break, and it wasn't like Roma were even that rapid. Like, you know, it was like Henrik Mkhitaryan like ripping them apart, not like Mbappe.
Yeah.
So that I think that's like immediately in terms of their title defence. I mean you guys have kind of like already summarised it pretty well, but like, yeah, I think that's where they'll be undone because, like, yeah, for sure, Demiral looks very promising. De Ligt, I think, is already essential to that defence, to be honest. The sooner they get him back in the side, the better. But say Demiral does come back, that defence is never going to be, in the next year, that defence is never going to be at the level that it was like 2-3 years ago, is it? And that was kind of the bedrock of their success before. And are they going to be able to outscore other teams in, you know, based on the players they brought in? Like they'll definitely, I think, you know, I could see them scoring more than they did last season, and last season they did like score a decent amount, but you know, they're not going to be on the level of Atalanta, for example, and maybe not even Inter in terms of their attacking output. Their title defence is, yeah, it's a tough one.
Do you think that they'll win the league, McCubs?
I don't want to bet. It's hard to bet against them because they always do it. But if there's a season for it to happen, it's this season, isn't it? Like it just feels like last season felt like it was going to happen, but this season in particular, I think so. But again, it's like I think we'll be better. You know, I want to have another month to watch them and to see what Pirlo does with that team, because I don't want to write him off just yet. I don't feel like we wrote him off that much, but it's just such a big job to come into, isn't it? It's just so big to come into a squad which has kind of been in decline and performances have been in decline, and then, you know, to be expected to be the saviour. It's just massive. And I know I don't think he, I get the impression he doesn't really feel that pressure, and is pretty excited about the whole project, but yeah, it's a lot to ask of him.
Agree. Dougs, what do you reckon? Will they win the league?
No, I don't think they will. And I don't think there's any particular shame in it, to be honest, because of the way Conte's built his Inter Milan squad. I didn't even mention Vidal and Nainggolan as well. Like they've built a squad purely to win the league for this year, really. Judging off their business this summer and turning down Tonali, etc., or not turning down, you know, missing out on Tonali and going for Vidal instead. Yeah, I just think with the amount of players that Juve have now sort of transferred in over the last two summers, it's really difficult to gel a cohesive unit, and particularly for a manager with very little experience. So I think it will be really difficult for Pirlo. But to be honest, it might go down really badly in Italy, but I wouldn't hold it against him. I wouldn't write him off as a top-level manager if he doesn't win the league this year. I think it's just an exceptional year of competition and a lot of sides that aren't... There's not that much between them, I would say.
Yeah, agreed. And I'd love to see Atalanta do it. Like, I don't know if they can, but they've already smashed Lazio this season. I think they've got Napoli the weekend after the international break, the weekend coming up. So if they win that one as well, then, you start to look at Atalanta and think maybe this is the year. And it kind of feels like it needs to be the year now. They've got a lot of guys aging out. Okay, great, guys. Well, shall we move on to one thing we learned, which... This week, I think we were going to talk a little bit about the revelations that some of the leading clubs in the Premier League are pushing to reform the division. And the response to this has been mixed, I would say. So, obviously, as we know, the government essentially have asked that the larger clubs in the country, the Premier League clubs, provide money to the EFL clubs during this period of financial crisis. The government, they're doing their normal thing, which is not taking any responsibility themselves and asking that other people solve issues for them. And the Premier League seems to have taken this as an opportunity to try and cement their strength in other ways. So their current proposal would provide, I think, $250 million in bailout money, essentially, for EFL clubs. But what they want in return is an 18-team Premier League. They want to have strict control over things like broadcast rights and takeover bids. And they want to solidify power among the top teams within the Premier League as well. So at the moment, if you want to put through any strict reforms to the league, I think you need a 14 club. You need 14 clubs in the Premier League to vote for it, essentially a super majority. Whereas this, I think, would give more power to 9 teams who have had consistent runs in the Premier League. So obviously the traditional big powers plus a couple of others. Guys, I have no idea really where to start with this, except that it feels a little bit like the league has said, right, if you're going to make these demands from us, then we're going to take this opportunity to get something back in return. We know that you desperately need cash, but we're only going to give it to you if you pretty much give up any chance of reaching the top level in the long term.
Yeah. I'd say it's, we've got to be kind of a bit careful because it's leaked documents and there's probably all sorts of legal proceedings, but I would say it's quite cheeky is a nice way of putting it from the top clubs, to be honest. They've utilised the situation and the need for funding in the EFL. It's weird that they weren't prepared to change the arrangements or just give it out on no condition. Instead, they've tried to change the entire structure of English football. How many teams are in each division, how relegation and promotion works in each division. And there are a lot of good proposals in this. I'm a fan of scrapping the Carabao Cup. I don't think anyone will really cry over that. Fan of scrapping the Community Shield. Reducing the amount of games has needed to be done for quite a while. But the idea that 6 big sides and plus 3 should have a controlling stake in the top division seems totally ridiculous, particularly when they're allocated on a particularly bizarre basis of longest runs in the division. Like, surely Leicester City should have a stake in it over West Ham, a club that has been complete turmoil over the last 5 or 6 years. It's been relegated twice in the last 10, I think. Whereas Leicester City have won the Premier League, established themselves as a top 10 side. Like, I don't feel there's much logic behind that. And for everyone being like, oh, West Ham have been in the top flight for longer. Well, on that basis, why are Man City in it then? Who have only really established themselves since being bought by a country. So I feel like there's so much good positives that they have come up with the proposals. And the EFL does need to be helped out massively. But I just feel like they've utilised their sort of struggle of the lower league clubs to try and basically assert themselves and put themselves at the top of the tree and basically pull up the drawbridge for any club trying to establish themselves in the top 6 mix. They're basically trying to turn it into a sort of La Liga light, where it seems like most of the control in La Liga goes to Barcelona and Real Madrid in terms of broadcasting rights, you know, allocation of money. And it feels like Liverpool and Man United, who proposed this deal, have tried to create that as well. So I think this is potentially really dangerous. But it is just leaked emails at the moment.
Yeah.
And we don't know how far along it is. And I'm sure there was going to be discussion about how it would work out. But I do go into this with a bit of trepidation.
Definitely. I think, yeah, if what we've read is true, it's pretty worrying. But like, I think, you know, the proposal to make it an 18-team Premier League, I think that would instantly plunge 2 League Two sides into the non-league if it were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Parachute payments, I think, would be scrapped as well.
Yeah.
So obviously getting relegated from the Premier League suddenly becomes a much more problematic thing. And I think, you know, one of the positive things, although, you know, it kind of made a lot of Championship teams kind of put them more on the level of Premier League teams and potentially, you know, wasn't really much of a help to, you know, hasn't necessarily helped League One and League Two. It's probably, you know, anything put the plight of clubs lower down the divisions into starker contrast. But I think the parachute payments generally, like over the years, have meant that the competition in the Championship has got better and the quality of teams in the Championship has got better. So I think that's something that is highly contentious, I think. It does feel exploitative, doesn't it? Like, I mean, it's not like the EFL, like clubs lower down in the EFL haven't needed help before. Mm. Like, where was this kind of, you know, for example, Macclesfield, who were, the kind of final nail in the coffin was the pandemic, but they've been struggling really badly for like the last 12 months. I just feel like, yeah, it just does feel like quite opportunistic. At least like you're saying, Doogie, at least from what we know at the moment, it feels quite opportunistic. Yeah. But yeah, I think, but also I think like yeah, like you're saying, there's some decent things there. It's just, yeah, it's just the trade-off just seems massive. Like you can do those things without completely restructuring like English football, because we know like whatever happens in the Premier League always has massive ramifications for the rest of the country.
Yeah, and I mean, so in some regards, you could say it looked quite generous on the face of it. Like, yes, parachute payments would be scrapped, but on the other hand, I think a quarter of Premier League TV revenue would be disseminated among the EFL clubs, right? But in a way, I feel like it's maybe looking at things the wrong way, because to me, English clubs have arguably the greatest asset in football, which is that they have probably the most in-demand global football product. Mm. And it doesn't seem really like these proposals are based around safeguarding that product as entertainment. Like, what's going to determine overall the value of the TV deal and the value of these clubs ultimately is whether people want to watch the league, whether people are excited and entertained by the league. And I think all these things are going to make the league probably more predictable and more boring. I mean, except the odd thing. Like, so for instance, the idea that the bottom two clubs at the end of a season get relegated and the third from bottom club go into the championship playoffs, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, like, that's quite exciting.
That's really fun, that's entertaining, and I think it's only fair that teams that have performed over a 46-game season in the championship get a shot at teams which have underperformed in the Premier League, and despite having a lot more money. Though on the other hand, if the Premier League is then a 34-game season and the Championship is a 46-game season, then you say, well, what are the odds that these teams are actually able to compete with Premier League sides, no matter how badly those sides have done? I mean, it just feels a bit... I don't get excited thinking about it. In the same way that the European Super League, you know, there's no part of me really that wants to watch it. It doesn't excite me more than the Champions League does, really.
But even the relegation concept would actually... It sounds like it gives the Championship clubs more chance, but actually it doesn't, because that third bottom side in the Premier League before it changed to 18 would instantly be relegated automatically, and there'd be four teams in the playoffs in the Championship, whereas in this way there'd be three teams from the Championship and one team from the Premier League. So it's actually not really creating any better odds. And I think you raising the European Super League is absolutely vital in this. It feels like the top clubs in the Premier League are basically clearing space in the football calendar to allow an expanded Champions League or a European Super League, just to try and increase their coffers, because they know that's where it's eventually going. So they're dressing it up as charity, but I feel like there's potentially some other motives at play.
And pre-season friendlies as well. Pre-season friendlies are very lucrative for clubs, even though fans don't give a shit about them. Like, I mean, it's just really difficult. And I don't know, to me, it feels a little bit like the way that universities conceive of international students, where they're like, international students are how we make our money. And so as a result, that's what we care about. But ultimately, it's not the thing that's going to be best for the club's financial future or for the fans of those clubs, I think. Well, I think we've covered European football in quite a bit of depth there, guys. Thanks very much for coming on the show today. Do you have anything to plug, Mikey?
Go and watch. We did a scout report on Everton. Came out on Sunday. Go and watch that. Go and obviously subscribe to the podcast channel if you haven't all done so already. Go to EFD, subscribe to that. Yeah, lots of stuff going on.
Dukes, anything to add?
No, not particularly. Keep supporting all our three channels. We've been very busy at the start of this season. I think Henry Hill wrote a very good Everything You Need to Know About Marina Granovskaya, the Chelsea director who has, you know, been the mastermind behind their incredible summer. So go check that out as well. But yeah, as I said, keep supporting all three channels.
Great. Thank you very much, guys. And thank you to you guys for watching or listening at home. Of course, if you are watching this, you can also get this as an audio podcast using your favorite podcast catcher. And if you are listening to this as an audio podcast, then of course you can watch it as well. Head over to Football Daily Podcast and subscribe. Thanks very much to everyone, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.